things, Archie. Archie's here. Betty's here. Veronica too. Reggie's here. Hey Jughead, where are you? Come on, let's go with the Archie Show.
Welcome to Archie Digest, the Riverdale podcast. This is a podcast that's about a story that's about a town, and tonight we are talking about Chapter 11, To Riverdale and Back Again, which is not the same thing as that god-awful TV movie we watched during hiatus. I'm Chris Hayner.
I'm Craig Byrne.
And I'm Russ Burlingame.
Oh, you guys, I don't know if you know this, but FP is in jail.
And that's not cool. And I feel not really guilty, but I was totally trolling when Michelle was on the other week. I'm like, oh, they would never put FP in jail, would they? When I had totally seen the episode. So, sorry, Michelle.
This is payback for Scream. He was a murderer.
That's true.
Yeah, I had not seen this episode yet, but because of the way that the episode 12 synopsis is worded with a shocking arrest, as soon as you said, oh, they'd never put him in jail, I knew for a fact. I was like, well, that's how 11 ends.
We should say, if you hear wind chimes in the background, that's because we're all sitting on the porch having a sweet tea and relaxing, or Russ is recording on his front porch tonight, and I'm kind of loving the ambiance.
Yeah, my sister-in-law is back in town from Australia, and the room that I usually had been recording in, because it was like far away and remote and I wasn't going to wake up the children, is where Angela stays. And so now that she's back, I don't have that room anywhere in the house where I can wake people up doing this at 12:54 at night my time.
I mean, I feel like the natural solution is to make your sister sleep on the porch.
Down under, that's where people say biddy.
That's true. That's true.
Oh, is she close personal friends with KJ Apa?
Isn't he from New Zealand?
I don't know.
That would be like asking us if we're friends with Canadians.
I am friends with Canadians. They're lovely people. That's not offensive.
But I mean, we're not all connected. It's not Marvel.
I just want to know whether KJ Apa and Rose McIver are friends, because that stands to reason, doesn't it?
I mean, doesn't everyone want to be friends with a Power Ranger?
Also, Rose McIver is a very sweet person. I know this is a tangent. Totally. And if they hadn't
KJ not? Is that what you're saying?
If she wasn't already playing a character on the CW with white hair, I would totally say she should be Sabrina.
Ooh.
Yeah. I did a fan casting Sabrina article for my site, and it's so goddamn hard to think of under 25 or 30 that I know that aren't either A, massive movie stars who probably wouldn't do a network TV show, or B, already on the CW.
Well, that's why they just keep finding new ones.
Well, apparently Dove Cameron, who's a DC Comics, or not DC Comics, a Disney star, tweeted a link to your article, and now the Disney fans are going nuts over it. And Archie even retweeted it.
Nice.
They're Disney fans?
Yeah.
Interesting.
I had no idea. Once I release my stories like a bird into nature, I very rarely know if they get any kind of traction.
But I find it weird because there are people.
Serious question.
Yeah.
What is Dove Cameron? Is that like a Disney star, a Disney kid star?
Yeah, I think she's in The Descendants, maybe.
Oh, that's kids of the evil villains thing.
But either way, even Madeline favorited her tweet, which I find a little odd. But if Dove Cameron shows up as Sabrina, well, it's already been spoiled.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like it.
Well, I don't think she was in my list, so certainly if it got that kind of traction off of her, then probably that's a piece of evidence anyway.
I just looked up Dove Cameron. she looks way too Disney to be Sabrina.
Yeah.
Well, so did Melissa Joan Hart. She looked too Nickelodeon.
And if you type in Dove Cameron into Google, that one of the top stories is Dove Cameron fans want her to play Riverdale's Sabrina the Teenage Witch.
Nice.
So, there we go. So should we get into the episode?
Yeah, absolutely.
Take it away, Craig.
Oh, I get to take it away because yeah, I've seen it the most recently. I watched it again last night. So I'm trying to think, where did we start? Well, gosh, this is the worst podcast episode ever because I don't have notes. I'm trying to think
the worst one was the one I'm not on, probably.
Say
no
what?
Offense, no offense to Mimi, who filled in well, I'm sure. I don't know. I don't listen to the show. I'm not a fan. But I'm assuming the one without me was pretty terrible.
I mean, like, I know that, you know, obviously Alice is back. Not Alice. Yeah. Mary. Mary Andrews is back. There's going to be a homecoming dance. And she and Fred go together, and Alice has her little conversation with Hermione, and they end up all three going together.
That was weird, because it was especially weird when Alice, right? Alice Andrews?
Mary Andrews. Alice Cooper.
There's too many people. It was very bizarre. Oh, because it was bizarre when Alice Cooper, like, accosted Mary Andrews at the dance, and Mary Andrews was like, I got to get back to my dates. I'm like,
yeah.
What?
Yeah, I won't lie. I really, you know, with the little bit of stunt casting of Molly, I loved the idea of Molly Ringwald as Mary Andrews, but I never was like, okay, yeah, let's make her a series regular and bring her back to Riverdale. Yeah. Like Molly herself. But after that scene, I totally want her back all the time because I really like the idea of somebody who can just, like, shut Alice down.
Oh, really? I went in the complete other direction. I feel like, for some reason, I love Molly Ringwald. I've had a crush on Molly Ringwald, like, as far back as I can remember. But, like, so much, I don't know if it's that her dialogue feels some of it just feels forced. Where I'm like,
yeah.
With so much going on, it feels like they're like, oh, so we're going to shoehorn in Archie's mom just because, look, it's Molly Ringwald. And I'm like, we don't have time for this. We have a murder to solve. Like, there's maple syrup everywhere. Like, we got to keep moving.
Well, speaking of keeping moving, we've got at this homecoming dance, Cheryl wants to be the queen, as Cheryl does, and she wants to bring Polly with her. And there's all kinds of stuff going on with Polly snooping around. And we see that Clifford Blossom has a selection of, like, wigs. It's like Lex Luthor or something.
Yeah.
That's the creepiest thing. Because, correct me if I'm wrong, they were all the same. But Cheryl said, like, he has one for every occasion.
And his natural hair color matches Sheriff Killer.
Oh, God damn it.
Really? Maybe they're brothers.
Are we doing this already?
Yes, we are. But
I'm pretty sure this is the first time I've been on the podcast since, like, before vacation, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Can you just give me a break? Bring me back happy. Damn it, Craig.
I had a legitimate killer adjacent thing that I think won't offend you, Chris, because it's not a joke. And this is something that I might as well just bring it up now while we're on this, and then we can go back to what you're talking about. One of the things that I thought was really in the season was that you had both Betty and Jughead who just flat out confronted their parents outright about the possibility that they're the killer. Mm-hmm. Once Kevin knows next week that framed and that somebody planted that evidence, do you think that Kevin is going to have that kind of – do you think that's a conversation that's going to happen?
I think the more likely conversation that's going to happen in this week's episode is the notion that Kevin is dating a Southside Serpent. I think that – I don't think Kevin and his dad have had that talk yet, and his dad might not know, but I think his dad will find out.
That's fair. I definitely think that's in the cards.
Yeah. So, you know, both of them are guilty of doing something they've been keeping from each other, I guess is what I'm saying.
But going back to the what you were saying about Clifford Blossom, listening, and so I'm going to tell her that she needs to, like spend 45 seconds with her ears shut, because there's a thing. Okay, now. Is it just me, or is the Clifford Blossom thing very much a Leland Palmer? Like, the idea of you kill your kid and then overnight your hair turns white?
No, because he already was wearing wigs in the pilot.
Was he, though? Because I remember that the comment about how much worse the wig got, at least. I don't know if it was
that. Yeah, I just assumed it was a different wig in the pilot.
Yeah. But it's just one of those things that struck me. I was like, "Well, that's an interesting, you know, that's an interesting thing for that trauma to, you know." And I, again, with the pilot, I don't even know, because obviously with the pilot, by the time we caught in, I don't remember the flashback versus not of when, you know, whether we saw the Blossom parents before Jason was gone.
I believe we did maybe episode. No, I guess that would have been. I was thinking episode 5, but that was actually a flashback with Polly. Was
yeah.
it? No?
Yeah.
5 or 6.
So I don't know. It was just a weird thing that I thought, like, huh, that feels like a reference. It just, like, to me, it felt very much like. And first of all, that's a thing that, like, you know, when trauma happens, your hair goes all white like that. It's like a storytelling trope almost. But because of the partnership, so to speak, between and Riverdale, it struck me as particularly like, huh, that's an interesting thing to happen.
So are you going all in on the idea that it was what's-his-face?
I don't know. My thing with this is, yeah, my thing with Clifford is I'm not necessarily all in on it. Certainly I've had other things, but I just, whatever has come up with me in the last few weeks that I'm like, oh, maybe it's this person, maybe it's that, more compelling than Clifford. I haven't been able to build a case against anybody in the same way that I have with Clifford. And so I'm certainly, like, I'm not 100% sure that I'm right by any stretch, but I am pretty much committed to the fact that at this point, that's my theory, because I haven't come up with a better one in the interim.
Okay.
I do think at the end of tonight's episode, we do need to just, like, put our cards on the table, who we think it is, and then we'll know who's right or who's wrong after Thursday.
That, and also I do think we don't always do this. We've done it once or twice, but I do think there are some things that I would like to discuss and speculate about a little bit in the teaser for chapter 12, but we can get to that after.
Okay.
One of the things that you kind of touched on was like the actual homecoming. First of all, is it just me or is Weatherby really a dick to Betty?
Yeah, I don't know why it was so imperative that she does that stuff if other people are taking care of it.
It's weird because I actually just read a review, like an early review copy of the comic that comes out. We're recording on Tuesday, May 2nd. The comic comes out on the 3rd, and then episode 12 comes out on the 4th. The comic that comes out on the 3rd earlier in the season, but it, like, you see the scene where Weatherby essentially recruits Betty to come on board and person in charge of the homecoming dance. Mm-hmm. And even in the comic, it read like he's just a dick to Betty. Maybe yeah. That's just the dynamic. I kind of felt like I almost felt like not that Weatherby has changed dramatically since the last time we saw him when he seemed like a pretty reasonable dude. I feel like there's something there where he's just like, he takes Betty for granted because she's his like personal assistant, you know?
Yeah, I could see that.
But it's a weird dynamic
character. We don't.
Yeah, I hope that we get to see more.
Yeah.
Pardon? I hope we get to see a little bit more of him next year, because I feel like there's something there. I certainly feel like that's one of those things, and I don't know if it's like the writers or the actor or both, but I feel like somebody has a whole lot more backstory than for that dude than what's actually ending up on screen.
Maybe he had a thing with the real Miss Grundy.
Yeah.
I'm kidding, but
the dynamic between Hermione and Mary was really interesting. Like, it's kind of weird because, you know, we talked earlier in the season about how that Fred and Mary were super estranged and that it was not necessarily good. And then there was that episode where Archie was just like, no, Dad, it's fine. I'm fine. Mom's fine. Everybody's fine. You should date. You should be happy. This episode comes and it's very much like Mary is just like, no, screw you, because you were dating my husband. And I'm just like, okay. I wasn't necessarily expecting it to be a thing.
It's very bizarre. Honestly, the entire portrayal of the Fred and Mary marriage or dissolution of marriage or whatever their relationship currently is, it plays very strangely in that it feels like it's just kind of normal to them when clearly their son is making a bigger deal out of it than they are. It's confusing. Okay, so I come from a family of parents who weren't together. It would be confusing if the mother comes back and is like, no, I'm going to the dance with your dad as a chaperone, as his date. Like, that's a confusing thing for parents to do to their kid who's still sort of processing the fact that they're not together anymore.
Yeah, and particularly because the drunk dial thing adds an extra wrinkle to that. First of all, the fact that, oh, I've only been drunk dialed like twice in my life, but I very quickly knew that the person was drunk. That if your kid calls you shit-faced from the loudest party ever, you probably know, especially when he starts talking about how you need to get back together with your ex-wife. Mm-hmm. That was something that was just not at all addressed. Like, they apparently weren't at all concerned that as soon as they left town, their son was drunk and probably throwing a party.
Yeah.
Yeah, they didn't really seem to care. Like, and I get it. Like, it's, again, Archie falls into the trope of, like, stereotypical teenager. Yeah. Like, of course, his parents go out of town. He throws, like, a raging party, bro. So I understand why they wouldn't, like, totally lose their shit on him. But they seem weirdly kind of okay with it.
Yeah, it avoiding that part of it, weirdness of that whole thing, where, like you said, it very much, like, the way they were acting seemed almost designed to mess with Archie's head.
Yeah, this poor kid.
Well, I liked the little snark, like, when Mary found out about Archie and Veronica maybe being a thing, it's like, oh, like father, like son, you know, you're both players.
Yeah.
You know?
I'm sure Luke Perry loved that line.
Yeah. Oh, no, but they are a lot alike, but it's weird because, you know, Michelle is messaging us on Twitter right now, and she's pointing out that, you know, she didn't really buy Fred and Mary as a former couple, and I kind of see that. That's the other thing that I find kind of weird about this show is, you know, obviously they all went to high school together, but I'm pretty sure that Molly Ringwald's at least 10 years older than Marisol Nichols.
Yeah,
I don't know if that's relevant.
They cast and loose with the ages of everyone on these. Like that, yeah, that I feel like that's fine.
But she seemed older than everybody.
I think Luke Perry seems older than everybody, to be honest. Like, Marisol Nichols looks legit maybe 30 years old. With a 16-year-old child.
Fair.
That's fair. Although, Cammy looks like a baby, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe that,
and the Blossoms clearly don't look like they went to high school the same time as everybody else.
No,
they definitely. Although, I mean, they certainly have conflicts with everybody else, but I feel like with the Blossom, like I kind of feel like the Blossoms, I'm shocked that that Cheryl and Jason go to Riverdale High. I feel like they should be at a private school anyway.
Pembroke.
Like just the class of the family.
Well, maybe it was to teach them humility, which is something we'll learn about in season 2. Yeah. Like why exactly they were really here. And dog just jumped up, so you might hear her jiggling around or barking.
Jiggling.
Kind of like your wind chimes.
Well, jumping back to this episode real quick, can we talk for a second about the milkshakes?
That was creepy, yeah. Too.
I mean, from the beginning, like, you're just like, why does she keep bringing her milkshakes? Is she trying to kill her? Is this poison? I mean, eventually we found out that she slipped her a Mickey in one of them, but it feels like it. Like, am I wrong?
It was super. It is, of course, the weird, like, magic elixir where it can knock her out but not affect the fetus at all.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I actually thought maybe there was a slight chance the Blossoms actually cared about her a little bit. And then when we saw that she was given the milkshake to put her out, it's like, oh, crap. And it's interesting because I think Cheryl – now, do you believe that Cheryl thought she literally just fell asleep and skipped out until later when she kind of checked her out?
Cheryl is – I feel like Cheryl very much operates under the ignorance is bliss rule, where she goes out of her way to not learn the truth because she knows she's not going to like the truth.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty good breakdown of it. And I think that plays nicely into the ways that she retreats into the comfort of her family when other things get hard. And then, like, when everything else, when nobody else is shitting on her, she's pretty open about how crappy her family is.
Well, meanwhile, I think it also helps to, it helps, like, if you look at the dance, like, you understand why Cheryl acts like queen bitch, because she's sort of fooling herself into believing that, like, no, she is the queen of the school. And
yeah,
she knows in her heart that's not true. She knows in her heart that, like, her family life is totally effed, but she's able to delude herself enough to where that sort of falls by the wayside.
Was it this week or last week that she, like, dismissed her posse and now she's basically totally alone?
Last week.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was – it's just interesting because it's like – and also it's interesting when she's like, don't think that because you have those babies that you're safe. And there was the whole shock of finding the ring to begin with, which I think is something that we need to discuss. Oh, and by the way, Marisol Nichols is 42 years old, which I thought she was like my age. So, yeah, she looks very good for 42 years old. Molly Ringwald is 49. Luke Perry is 50. This is all according to Michelle.
Oh, there you go.
And Gabrielle Carteris is 82.
Who? Gabrielle Carteris?
And Ian Ziering, 70. No, I'm just kidding. Okay. Yes. Yeah, so
is eternal.
Machen will eternally look 30 and beautiful.
Yep.
Yeah. So the ring. Do you want to talk about that?
Vader wants.
My dog clearly wants to.
Jingle, jingle, jingle.
That which was an Archie song. Jingle, jangle.
There you go. See, it all connects, just like Jeff Loeb
talk. So why weren't you in Hawaii this weekend, Russ?
I don't understand the reference.
Apparently they did an Inhumans press thing in Hawaii.
That has nothing to do with Riverdale, you monster.
Yeah.
I know, but it's still all connected.
Probably somebody from my site was there. I have no idea. I don't cover any of the Marvel stuff. I'm officially like the DC TV and comics guy.
Yeah, you're and Archie. TV.
Well, yeah, and Archie. I have more than just that role, but like a DC staff and a Marvel staff. And the only time you're going to see me covering Marvel in a big way is when you get characters like the Fantastic Four, where I'm the only person on staff who cares about them. Human stuff is just not at all, like, it's literally just not even on my radar. I don't watch Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I probably won't watch Inhumans till it's on Blu-ray. No idea.
But do they even release the Marvel stuff on a Blu-ray eventually? I don't even know.
I assume so. I mean,
ooh, okay. Staying on topic, I can't wait till Riverdale is on Blu-ray because that's going to look beautiful.
It's true. It's very
true.
There
we go. Back on topic. So,
I honestly don't know the last time I bought a Blu-ray, and I won't be buying anything anytime soon on Blu-ray.
Did we still not talk about the ring thing? I can't remember.
No, we still haven't gotten started on it.
You talk about the ring thing. Ring thing, do your thing.
Yeah, I mean, certainly, and again, kind of speaking to my long-running now theory that the Blossoms had something directly to do with Jason's murder. If this had come earlier in the season, this would have fallen under where, like, Hal Cooper stole all that paperwork. And I said, it's way too early in the season for them to just give it up like that. And so I counted him out as a suspect because it was so obvious that he should be in. And, like, the thing with the ring is so incriminating that if it wasn't, like, the week before come, I would 100% say, no, that's too easy. But coming now, I'm just like, oh, man, that not only plays into, like, my own pet theory anyway, but we're so close to the reveal. It feels like that's got to be for it. Then I think they obviously are, like, hand in glove with whoever is so that, you know, kind of, I think the very first week that I said I thought Clifford Blossom was the killer, I said something along the lines of, even if he didn't pull the trigger, I think that, or he could know if he just made a phone call. And I think the presence of that ring pretty much confirms that part of the theory at a minimum.
I don't think anything's confirmed until we actually see what happened.
Nana Blossom did it. Her and her witchcraft, and that's how Sabrina will come in.
That was actually a thing that I was wondering. I think I shot you this message at like 3 in the morning, Craig, while I was loopy. What do you think of the odds that we're going to see a version of Sabrina that's like cousins with the Blossoms?
I hope not.
Just one of those weird, wacky things where I was just like, I could see them just for whatever reason connecting it through Nana Blossom.
Well, maybe Nana Blossom was part of the same coven as Hilda and Zelda.
It's true.
Excuse me.
But yeah, so, excuse me. So then we've got the whole thing about Alice in the journalism office, and she's like, Betty and Veronica, you know, obviously the killer's not in this room. And then she starts grilling Veronica about Hiram, and then they start to kind of go after FP. You want to talk about that?
Yeah, yeah. Like Alice, what deputizes Archie and Veronica to, like, we gotta get FP. And they break into his house.
Like, yeah, this was and it's kind of the thing that we were talking about off mic before about the Flash, how, like, I felt like some of the things that bothered me tonight were Joe acting like a dick because the story needed him to be in a certain place. And I feel like that's kind of what happened this week, where it was like, or Veronica and Archie, excuse me, let themselves be manipulated super easily, probably just because they needed them to be there so that they could know.
It makes more sense, the Veronica side of it makes a lot of sense to me. She thinks her father's involved. She's trying to either prove him guilty or innocent. She's not close to Jughead, like, at all. Like, she's barely had any scenes with him. So, like, Jughead isn't personally part of, like, her circle. Like, I understand
I don't think Veronica
getting duped into taking part in it. The Archie taking part of it, because, like, I just don't want Jughead to get hurt again, man. Like, that's so
bad. See, so... for me, though, I feel like Echo was still kind of told in no uncertain terms that if you do this, it's going to hurt Betty.
Yeah.
And so, like, I felt like it was kind of shitty all the way around. And like I said, I think that by the end of it, that the story was that they needed the characters to be there so that they would know that FP was framed.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Or was he?
Dun, dun, dun. Well, that's the other thing is that, like, I felt like and this is totally independent of any theories or jokes or anything about this, but I felt like the way that the camera focused on his hands, Sheriff Keller's hands when he was holding the box,
mm-hmm.
It just felt to me like we were supposed to take it to mean that he was manipulating the evidence in some way.
Oh boy, you guys, not this again.
But, no, I'm again, like, there's a difference between, like, going down the rabbit hole of the conspiracy theory of making fun of you versus, like, just saying, like, cinematically, the way that they shot that scene, I felt like it looked like that evidence was being manipulated in some way.
Well, like, I hope that's not the case.
Certainly, I think there's an argument to be made that, like, well, maybe FP is not 100% off the hook because that gun, like, he could have brought it. Like, the weirdest thing about the idea that the gun exonerates him is the fact that if he had the gun, who goes out and murders teenagers,
mm-hmm.
isn't it likely that he carries the gun with him? So, like, maybe it wasn't there when you guys broke into his house because he wasn't there. I don't necessarily think that it not being there is a totally exonerating thing.
But I actually think it will be, though, because that'll be what makes Jughead forgive Archie and Veronica for being there. Because whatever they did absolutely. There will get FP off.
I agree totally. And I'm speaking in the, like, if I'm in the world of Riverdale, I don't know that I believe, like, Archie and Veronica, that's an exonerating circumstance, because it's just like, well, maybe he had the gun with him and then he came home. Storytelling perspective and from an audience perspective, I absolutely think it's an exonerate. Like, I think that at this point you can pretty much take FP off the list. But
yeah. Do you think FP had, so you don't think FP had any involvement whatsoever?
It wouldn't surprise me at all if he had some level of involvement. And certainly, again, I think that he is, like, I think, and I thought basically since episode 2 or something, that the serpents are somehow tied in.
I think FP knows who did it.
Yeah, I think he either knows or again, I think that he doesn't know because he doesn't want to know because he figures that it's better for him not to.
I can see that.
But this does tie into a question about the trailer for 12 that I wanted to kind of run by you guys.
Cool. I haven't seen the trailer for 12.
I've only seen it, like, in passing.
Okay. Well, never mind. I can.
No, I'm actually very interested in this. What's your question? Like, what's the question?
It's the CW. So you have two different cuts of the teaser. One of them is like 20, 21 seconds long. And the other one's 30. Both of them culminate with the same thing, which is text on the screen that says you can't unsee a murder, and then everybody is huddled around Jughead's laptop. It's the Breakfast Club. It's, you know,
yeah.
Archie, Betty, Veronica, Jughead, and Kevin. They're all huddled around Jughead's laptop, and they are watching footage of Jason's murder. Okay. You hear the gunshot, and everybody freaks out. And there's a handful of things you can kind of dissect the crap out of because, like, nobody seems utterly devastated, which to me kind of says, like, okay, none of your parents did it. Because I feel like if it's your dad who's pulling that trigger, you react differently than everybody else who's just seeing a kid get killed. But kind of moreover, the larger question I had was, like, who the hell filmed that and why? And kind of the only thing that I could think of that made any kind of sense in my brain was the idea that what if Joaquin was the person who pulled the trigger and this was essentially his initiation into the Serpents?
But wouldn't Kevin have freaked out?
Arguably, yes, but you don't know where that relationship goes in the episode before you get to that point. I certainly like, and again, like you're right. Like that was the thing. That was the next thought that occurred to me was like, well, Kevin should have had some reaction, but again, like,
although what if Joaquin's the one that filmed it?
Yeah, there's that. Well, I mean, that was the, like, I don't know why anyone would have filmed it. The only thing I could come up with was that it was some kind of serpent like initiation thing. And so you need to film it to prove.
To be honest, it could also be a hidden camera. It could be security footage from something. It could be any number of things where it wasn't literally someone holding a camera. The question is who the hell got a hold of it, and why has it? How did these kids get a hold of it?
Why is it on Jughead's laptop?
Yeah, and not like I don't know on Sheriff Keller's laptop. Like Why don't the police have this video if it's showing a murder?
Well, if Keller is the one who's doing the thing, he wouldn't keep it on his computer.
I mean, to be honest, I'm pretty sure Kevin would react if it was his father.
Yeah, yeah.
Can we agree that FP stands for framed person?
No, it stands for Forsyth P. Jones, the third.
Forsyth Pendleton.
Pendleton, thank you.
Also framed person.
Yeah. I'll
anyway.
Yeah.
But, so we had... But yeah, also, so that, can we talk about how... Oh, sorry.
I was just going to say, so that was my kind of big, like, that last shot of the... And, it, like, the teaser is kind of bananas, because it's one of those, like, a you know, MTV cuts. Like, there's probably 15 shots in a 21-second trailer. You know, somebody confronting Penelope Blossom, like, because Penelope Blossom at one point in the trailer says, are you saying that I killed my son?
And also there was Hermione like crying in a door.
Yeah, Hermione like crumples against a door and Veronica is like consoling her, which kind of gives me the impression that whatever's going on, Hiram is A, coming home, and B, probably responsible for a murder. So, but yeah, I mean, the trailer itself was kind of bananas, but that last like shot of like the actual murder being captured on film for some reason was the thing that really kind of resonated with me as, oh, what can we dig out of that? And so as long as we were kind of wading in the direction of the serpents, I thought I'd mention that.
I wanted to bring up something totally different, which was the music in the episode, particularly played by Archie and Veronica. I really loved hearing Kids in America. It was really funny.
I have a serious problem with that entire scene.
Well, before you get to it, though, I thought it was really funny that at the last Q&A they had, somebody brought it up to Roberto as a reference to Clueless, and he seemed a little confused. But anyway.
What's your problem with it?
All right, so Mama Archie comes home. She's like, I hear you're a song or a singer now. He's like, yeah, a songwriter and a singer. You should come to the dance. Like, we're going to play music. I'm a songwriter. Come to the dance. We're going to play music. He plays one song, and it's not something he wrote at all.
Well, it's because they told him not to play his songs because they're depressing.
Oh, stuff like that. But stuff like that bothers me because you set up the idea of Archie being a singer-songwriter and then just have him do covers. And I understand why you do covers. It's a very upbeat song. It's like a very like rah-rah, let's dance like crazy song. But then just don't include that songwriter line earlier in the episode and it won't seem so out of place. It seemed very strange to me that songwriter Archie got on stage to play a cover.
But, I mean, he could tell his mom after. It's like, yeah, they didn't want to hear my songs because it made them want to blow their heads off.
Archie's songs
killed Jason Blossom.
But they didn't do that. That's the thing. They were like, oh, it doesn't matter. We'll just – Kids in America, go. And that was the end.
But there was other music in the episode I liked too. That wasn't the Archie's – can't even remember anymore.
I just wish they would pay more attention to like the little things like that. Like it's not hard. End of rant.
Yeah. It didn't bother me as much as it bothered you, but it was definitely a thing that I noticed. And I kind of agree that corrects her when she says singer is what is the one and only thing that makes it an issue. Like, if that line wasn't in there, I wouldn't have thought about it for a second.
But then there's her trying to get him to come back with her to Chicago, implying that Chicago is so much safer than Riverdale.
Yes, they're like, Riverdale's not safe anymore. You should come to Chicago. I'm sorry, what? I love Chicago, but that's a crazy statement.
Yeah. Now, what was the other music in this episode, though?
The Riverdale fight song, mm-hmm. probably, whatever the Pussycats sang.
Which, yeah, it was nice to see Josie again for 30 seconds.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not to count her makeup tutorial.
That's true. We probably saw more of her brought to us by CoverGirl than we saw brought to us by Warner Brothers Television this week.
Which is kind of sad, because we like Josie and we like the Pussycats around here.
Wearing my Josie shirt. Wearing my Josie and the Pussycats shirt.
What was the song that was played as they were raiding FP's trailer?
I have no clue.
I couldn't tell you.
But I know it was a good song choice, and now I feel like an idiot for not remembering. God, so we are right. Winning this podcast game today.
That's messed up, dog.
Yeah.
I'm sure we've been getting tweeted at. I'm sure that somebody is probably helping us on this as we speak. And that yeah, not
Michelle, Betty, and Juggy, you know, one of you, please answer. Let us know what the song was so I'm not a complete idiot.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I still might be an idiot, but I'll feel a little bit smarter.
I really enjoyed in this episode that we got a little of in the party episode as well is the very much darker side of Jughead. The very not trusting. He clearly has some bottled anger towards females. I, as much as it bums me out, and I'm hopeful that he and Betty will work their stuff out in the end, I appreciate that they're taking the time to explore this side of his personality as opposed to just kind of letting him just continue to be the weirdo guy.
Yeah, I feel like that was a good kind of antidote to what we saw in the party episode, because what we saw in that episode was Jughead very much being a dramatic teenager and being like, I'm a lone wolf. I'm crazy. And it's like, okay, dude, simmer down.
By the way, can we talk about FP cleaning himself up? I thought that was really interesting and seeing Jughead's reaction to that. That was way early in the episode.
It's a dude who's clearly like, oh my God, finally it's happening. My family's going to be able to come back together. And then it's immediately ripped away from him again.
I was going to go back to Toledo, but I decided not to because of you.
Yeah.
Maybe you can move to Chicago. Yeah, it's safer.
And again, kind of the weird thing of like, okay, for whatever reason, everybody's going to move from Riverdale this week. Like,
that'll be season 6 when the contracts are up.
There you go.
Everybody's going to move away.
I just moved to New York. Then Betty and Veronica could have gone to the Met Gala last night.
They dropped the Met. They call it the Met Ball on the show, but they dropped a Met Ball reference again last week when Hermione came into the reunion. She's like, "Well, it's not the Met Ball," and it's like, "Oh God, here she goes now."
Yeah, and I last night when Met Gala was trending on Twitter, I like tagged Cammy in some tweet, which my mentions have still not recovered because she favorited it.
I tweeted something about Veronica and the Met Ball as well.
Then actually Lily on Instagram posted a photo, like a Dan Parent drawing of the two of them in ball gowns and hashtagged it for the something about the Met Ball and tagged Cammy in it. So apparently we aren't the only ones making this joke.
Yeah, you can kind of drink to that. Like, anytime somebody mentions the Met Ball, it's like, okay, take a drink.
More in the first couple episodes.
Yeah. So, yeah, so you had, and obviously FP was asking a lot of questions, trying to figure out what Jughead knows, but also it seemed like he was trying to get Jughead to just drop it to get himself out of danger, I would imagine. To get Jughead out of danger.
And again, I think that speaks to the idea that FP knows exactly who did it. I think he certainly knows what they're looking at. And I think that you're going to find out, you know, this week that FP was very much saying, no, get off of this because I know who this is and what they're going to do to you, without wanting to be able to actually say that out loud.
Yeah. So that was a really good scene. And of course we had that really fun scene where Machinomics making pie.
Yeah.
It's always a good thing. And
nobody eats pie this time.
Yeah, and everybody, you know, FP's there starting to get grilled, and then what's-his-face, Hal shows up.
Yeah.
It's kind of awkward, and
yeah, they took the awkward dinner conversation to a whole new level this one, and it was kind of great.
And it also all came together, you know, which was cool.
Well, and for me, I guess because Alice goes almost completely unchallenged by anybody except for Betty most of the time. Or if she is challenged, it's like, you know, somebody slaps her, but it's over in 5 seconds. So to see people sparring with her this week and to see her kind of harassed and getting, you know, it was fun. It was a different side of the way that she's confrontational with people, and it was a different side of the way people interact with her. And so, like, seeing her try to FP into a corner and then FP be like, you think I'm stupid and that I didn't know you were doing this all night, was a nice touch.
But also, you know, there were more references to, like, their past. And we heard about, you know, I think they called them the King and Queen of Hell or something like that for Hal and Alice. And it's like, yeah, I would like a flashback episode. You can have little Archie and all that. And my dog just yawned at everybody. So my dog's not feeling it.
There was a little Archie reference in this episode, actually.
Oh?
And again, it was just Archie. I can't remember what he said, but he said something about, oh, and little Archie was so happy or something like that. And the only reason I really remember it is because when he said it, I tweeted, like, all caps, hey, another little Archie reference. And Archie Comics retweeted it, like, immediately.
Nice.
But I don't even remember what was said. I just remember the context of action out of it and then immediately having Archie retweet it.
Yeah. So going forward, we had all this go down, you know, with them going to FP's. They leave the trailer. Then FP goes back home. Cops arrest him. And then everybody comes outside. Oh, Betty sees her mom and Veronica talking and doesn't like it much.
Yeah.
That's probably what I mean. Yeah, I mean,
that came to a head before the arrest, obviously, because you need a Jughead kind of scene when everybody else finds out.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, Jughead, you know, he sees everybody just standing there talking. He's like, wait a minute, I feel like I'm left out. And then, of course, you know.
Yeah.
It turns out everything. He's better off being left out.
Yeah.
And now he's going to jail for a week.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, one major thing that we have not circled back around to yet that I feel like we should mention before we, like, move on here is we talked about the ring. We didn't talk about the ultimate disposition of the ring. Is
that Cheryl has it now?
That she lied to everyone and told them that she got rid of it.
Also, how mean was it when she called Polly Gollum?
That was a great Cheryl line.
Yeah.
But I, you know, I liked it because it was one of those things where there's the scene where, you know, Clifford asks her, what did you do with it? And she tells him, ability, I had to get rid of it, basically. And he says, great job. I knew I could count on you, and gives her the validation that she so desperately wants from her parents. And then once you get, next time you see her, she's got it in her hand. And I just remember that, like, during the episode, tossed it. And I was like, nope. Cheryl's not stupid. Either A, she wouldn't consider it to be a key piece of physical evidence, in which case she wouldn't get rid of it, because why? She would consider it to be a key piece of physical evidence, and there's no goddamn way that she's parting with it then.
Right. And you do think she does suspect her parents now, right? Are we in agreement on that?
I think that she pretty much has to.
No. Again, I think Cheryl is easily deluded. She's easily disillusioned.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, as much as it obvious to viewers, I think there's something in Cheryl that makes it almost impossible for her to truly believe that her parents would do something like that to the family, because she prizes the Blossom family name above everything else.
Even though, like, her parents were absolute shit to her.
Absolutely.
That's why Jason was the only one to protect her.
Yeah, but being a Blossom is literally all she knows. Like, she's very smart.
I don't know.
I don't know, man.
I think that the fact that she still has, like, I think the fact that she lied to them about it and that she still has that, she's at least suspicious. Like, I don't think that she necessarily believes they did it, but I think that it's hard to, you could just make the counter argument that she's just golluming it herself, that, you know, this is the only chance she's ever going to have this.
Well, I think she could also look at it as like a final connection to Jason. Like, that ring was given to Jason to give to his true love. She considers herself, in a not gross way, Jason's true love.
Yeah.
I don't know that I necessarily buy that it's that simple.
How like, dare you.
There's another piece of Riverdale news that I wanted to discuss before the final two episodes air. And Russ, hopefully you'll offer your theory that you told me about this, which is Ross Butler is being recasted as Reggie. Now, we haven't seen Reggie in a while, but you had an interesting thought about that. Would you like to share it with everyone, Russ?
I do too. 13 Reasons Why I Should Not Get a Second Season. That's a fucking mistake.
I could be on board with that, but
that's my thought. Go ahead.
Well, my thought was, I'm not even sure I would call this a theory, because I don't necessarily believe it, but I certainly think it's worth at least entertaining the notion that the reason that we got, well, we're saying goodbye to Ross and we're going to recast, and then we didn't get a recast, is because, in fact, maybe Reggie could be the second death, and that they basically wanted to get out ahead of Ross signing on for another show somewhere and it looking obvious. Partially that's driven by the fact that in the comics right now, they have this over the edge story where they seem to be intimating that they're going to either kill or maim Reggie Mantle.
I think that would be a mistake, man, for the show to get rid of Reggie without really taking advantage of having him.
I think so too. I'm wondering whether it's a possibility.
Also,
well, knowing Reggie, me.
Say again?
Yeah.
Then our theme song will be outdated.
Yeah, for a podcast.
That's the important thing. Yeah.
No, you know, it would be a very Reggie thing to do, you know, from the comics. And please know I'm joking. For him to show up in season two, tear off a Ross Butler mask, and be like, hey, you guys, you know, I was fucking with you with this fake face. And, you know, hand wave it. I know they won't, but Reggie would totally do that in the comic.
I will say I hope they recast another Asian actor, because I thought that was a really cool thing to do. Like, it was a really interesting way to go about it.
Yeah.
I don't think you can not. I mean, you can't. Yeah.
You would think you could not, but Marvel makes lots of Netflix shows all the time, and they tend to make very questionable decisions that you
except for
wouldn't make.
Danny Rand is a white guy in the comics.
Like, but even ignoring that, like, there's just this one, the dude's already been cast. Like, if he was set to suddenly become white,
that would be really offensive.
Like, characters in universe to notice that, hey, why are you white now?
Yeah.
Treatments. You know, treatments.
Well, also, speaking of recasting, Michelle pointed out to us, which none of us noticed, they changed Dilton on us.
Did they really? When did Dilton come back?
He was at the house party. But he also... The Dilton from episode 3 was the same Dilton as the house party, who was not the Dilton in the pilot.
Yeah, I hadn't noticed at all, partially
because... The current Dilton's first name is Major, so he could be on iZombie.
There you go. Although, I doubt anybody has the name as cool as Major Lilywhite.
It's true.
Yeah, that's true. But yeah, so I'm curious where they're going to go with that. I mean, you almost can't have the Archie gang without Reggie, and it's kind of sad that we haven't had much Reggie, but I thought Ross Butler was such a good choice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it kind of sucks.
I don't think they're going to kill him. That would be so weird. I hope they don't kill him.
I know that Michelle had asked us ahead of time to talk about like possible of choices to recast. I feel like other than Sabrina, or like if there's some other major character, like ancillary character who I'm not thinking of,
Midge.
I kind of feel like the odds are really good that all the teen characters are going to just be relative unknowns. Because I mean, Rappaport did such a fucking phenomenal job stocking with people you've basically never heard of except for Cole.
Ooh, I want to see who's going to play Midge.
Dove Cameron plays Reggie.
No.
Let's start that.
I'm into it.
Let's trend it.
That's suddenly he'll be right. Suddenly he'll be white, but it'll also be a she, so it'll just baffle the hell out of everybody.
Regina. Regina.
Yeah. There you go. And you know, there'd be something kind of progressive about the football captain being a girl.
Sure.
Yeah.
Hopefully we've really gone down a rabbit hole. I'm kind of in a weird way okay with Pitch ending because now we know we have a Hiram. But that's a spoiler. Well, are we going to be talking about spoilers?
I mean, is having Hiram a spoiler? They were pretty loud about it this week.
You know, I mean, for historically, if something has been like actual headline news,
okay,
not like something crawling around in the Reddit thread or set spy photos, or like if you're talking about something that was on the front page of TV Line or whatever, I feel like it's not a spoiler. It's just like it's fucking casting news.
So we can talk about the fact that Mark Consuelos is Hiram for season 2. He'll be a series regular.
And he looks nothing like he did in the comics.
I don't like it.
Of course, nobody looks like they do in the show in the comic.
I know.
You saw Archie's muscles in the one shot. It's like, yeah, no, that's not KJ. I mean, not that KJ... Wow, I just suggested that KJ doesn't have muscles. Obviously, that's not what I meant. I'll just shut up now.
Yeah, I don't know how I feel about the Mark Consuelos thing, mostly because I've seen Mark Consuelos act, and it's not great.
Well, neither was Molly Ringwald this week, let's be honest.
If you disparage Molly Ringwald in my presence again, we will fist fight now. I have faith in the producers picking someone right for the role, but man, I feel very, very on edge about that until I see it in action.
I still think that Hiram should be played by Rogelio from Jane the Virgin, but as Rogelio. That's because, I mean, he acts on the CW on the show in universe. It could happen.
Sure, I'll take that.
Michelle liked my Molly Ringwald comment.
Russ?
Say again?
How do you feel about Mark Consuelos?
You know, I'm indifferent. I'm kind of in the same spot you are. I haven't loved him in the stuff that I've seen.
All My Children.
But I haven't seen him in a lot, so I'm kind of
Yeah, well, we do have a special guest on the next episode. I don't want to announce who it is, just in case something goes wrong. More special than you, Russ.
It's true. It's true.
Or you, Chris, I mean.
Not more special than me, though.
I mean, this person actually got to make out with a character on Riverdale, which you haven't yet, as far as I know. Listen, you know, maybe you made out with Alice Cooper, but, you know.
We hugged.
We hugged. That was it. She actually, Machen is so sweet at the press line, which is why our podcast is late this week. One of the reasons is I was at the Riverdale press line for Paley last week. And unfortunately, I didn't get Machen for an interview. But when she said hi to me, she like walked by and gave me like a pat on the back. It just was very sweet, very familiar. And I appreciate that. Like, the cast seems so friendly. And I finally got to meet Casey Cott for the first time. So that was nice, too.
That's true.
And I asked him if a Keller could be the killer. And, of course, he won't answer me. I also asked him Sheriff Keller's first name. I can't remember the answer, but I'm trying to figure out Adobe Premiere so I can post those videos before Thursday.
I'm pretty sure that's the answer he gave you, but I won't blow the I won't blow the quote before you get your videos up.
What the hell? What is it?
Sheriff?
Sheriff? I just want to know.
No, I really don't remember his answer completely. I think he did make a variation of his first name is Sheriff joke.
Yeah, he did. That's because you told me about it like 15 minutes after you came home.
Okay, good. Because, yeah, that night was a blur. And, yeah, I didn't get Cole either, and I didn't get Madeline, but I got everybody else as far as I know. So, no Luke Perry either. But, you know, so I didn't get to ask Luke about, you know, Fred being the killer.
I don't think Fred's the
killer. But, yeah, so before we're done, on that, you know, before we finish for the night, we should probably put down our final bets on who killed Jason, since it's going to come out on Thursday.
And you know what? Yeah. I'm going to take it one step further, actually. Who do we think pulled the trigger? Because, like, it's easy enough to say Clifford did it. He paid someone. Or Hiram did it. Yeah. He paid someone. But, like, who was the actual trigger person who actually killed Jason Blossom?
Oh, I see where you're going with that. So like, Clifford could have been behind it, but he might not have done it.
That's all the conspiracy and the blah, blah, blah. Like, I want to know who the trigger man was.
Sheriff Keller. No, I still, like, no, in all seriousness, I don't know why I'm getting these Fred vibes. Because nobody expects it to be Fred. Everybody loves Fred. But, you know, he did screw over FP one time.
Oh,
and he did randomly fire FP. Maybe that was just a whole thing to, like, put on a ruse that they had issues between each other, but they really didn't.
You don't ever gamble, right?
I'm just being, like, the Riverdale equivalent of Alex Jones right now, except for I'm allowed to see my kids if I had any. But, yeah. Who do you guys think it is?
Ooh. Who do I think the trigger person was?
Yeah.
Let's see. Miss Grundy. It's the last chance I'll ever have to accuse Miss Grundy of killing Jason, you guys. Aw.
That's true.
No, I mean, we're pretty sure Grundy's not coming back, but she still could have been the one that did it.
I mean, then she would be on the tape that they watch.
Yeah.
Which, so, again...
And since everybody in that room knew that Archie banged her, I kind of feel like all eyes would go to Archie.
Wait. Oh, my God, you guys. What if Jason shot himself in the head?
That's like Cartman's mom is Cartman's dad.
Yeah, I don't know. Who do you think it is, Russ?
I really don't know. Again, like, with the... My best answer has been that I believe that he got stuck in the crossfire between Hiram and Clifford. I don't know who I think pulled the trigger. I think the big thing that I still kind of feel is that I think we're going to find out the person who kills him and the person who pulls the trigger is not the person who kidnapped him. Like, I think that
the serpents might have kidnapped him.
Yeah, exactly. That kind of like the scenario where the serpents kidnap him, somebody who's messing with serpent business stumbles across him and he gets killed because he's now a material witness to something bad. So to me, like that, like if I had to just put money down on like, okay, who pulled the actual trigger? I feel like I would probably still say Clifford because I just can't think of a better candidate. I think it's really unlikely that he's the one who pulled the trigger. I think he would be more likely to be the one who ordered it. But kind of like we said, that like the next best candidate I can come up with as just a trigger man would be like Joaquin. And I again, as much as I kind of hand-waved it at the time, I kind of feel like Kevin would have more of a reaction if Joaquin was the one on the video.
And they all would have looked. They all would have looked over at Kevin the way they would have looked at Archie,
yeah.
The fucking Miss Grundy.
Yeah. So yeah, I'm gonna go with Clifford because I can't think of another person who I think is more likely to have done it.
I'm actually gonna side with you on that because I don't think I honestly don't believe FP was involved in the killing. Mm-hmm. I don't know if he was involved in some other aspect of whatever happened or if he got dragged into it afterwards or if he wasn't involved at all. But I really don't think he was the man who pulled the trigger.
No, I agree. And again, a lot of this, it's funny because a lot of these things have been like opinions that I've just gotten more entrenched with over the last few weeks. And it could easily be something totally different than I've thought of. And I'll be like, fuck, that makes total sense. And I wasn't paying attention because I was thinking about the Blossoms. But I can't think of it.
I am really excited to find out on Thursday who did it.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I'm also excited for the finale to find out what the big bomb they're going to drop on everybody is. Because, like, I asked KJ last Thursday, I was like, so what part of the finale excited you the most? He's like, I can't tell you because it's the big thing. And I'm like, okay. So finale. We kind of had to, yeah, of the finale. Yeah. So,
yeah, that was actually that right there is what made me think, you know, the thing that I kind of put out there as a crazy, like, hey, do you think that the Blossoms are related to Sabrina? Just because. This is one I think that we can say because it's not spoilery. During our finale set visit, Madeline told us that the last time you see Cheryl, like the last shot of her character in this season, is a what the fuck moment. And I was just like,
maybe goes to Sabrina to resurrect Jason.
You know, I think we had this conversation because I feel like you put that out there at some point, and I can't imagine that you put that out there without the comment that Madeline made. So maybe we're retreading some ground. But I don't know, man. I feel like if there is an afterlife element to the show, I really hope it's like they kind of were talking about originally, where it's a Treehouse of Horror kind of out of continuity thing.
Yeah, I don't want Riverdale to be a genre show.
No. I like that they do. I appreciate that they do the things with like dream sequences and whatnot.
Yes. Yeah. Which means we could get Josie and the Pussycats in outer space.
Yeah, exactly.
Nah, they'll get spun off, let's be honest.
I really hope so, but Riverdale needs to get more than like 1.2 million viewers for that to happen.
Well, that's not up to me.
So.
It's up to me and my 1.3 million closest friends. No.
Yeah, you know, it's like, if it were up to me, we would just have the Archie universe take over. Forget DC. You'd have, like, a Sabrina show. You'd have this. You'd have the Mighty Crusaders. Well, maybe not the Mighty Crusaders.
No.
And I still, I want the photo op at Comic-Con of KJ Apa with what's-his-face, Shane from The Walking Dead, John as Bernthal. Punisher. John Bernthal, yes. I want to see the two of them in a shot together.
I'm into that.
Yeah. Either that or
Punisher meets Archie.
As much as I hate, hate's a strong word. As much as I don't respect reporters who show up to these things and like cosplay and dick around on camera, kind of feel like it would be worth it if somebody walked into the Riverdale press room dressed as the Predator.
Or Sharknado.
But all right, gentlemen, why don't we, I feel like we've exhausted ourselves. I know I'm exhausted at 2 in the morning. So why don't we go around the circle and where can everybody find you? We'll start with Craig.
Okay, you can find me at ksitetv.com until I go out of business. You can find me there. You can find me on Twitter at ksitetv, also at Riverdale TV. And that's where I post my Riverdale stuff. I should be posting some Riverdale videos on my YouTube channel, which is also called KSite TV. So that's where you can find me. I'm also on Instagram as Vader1206, if you want to see my ugly mug. And there you go. How about you, Chris? Where can people find you?
You can find me at chrishayner.com. You can find me at Chris Hayner, C-H-R-I-S-H-A-Y-N-E-R, on Twitter, on Instagram, facebook.com/HaynerWrites. Instagram, follow the water at Waterworld Photos at Waterworld Photos on Instagram because it'll make your life better. And for the next 2 weeks, I'll be writing about Riverdale for the Hollywood Reporter, so look for it there. Good stuff will be coming to it.
And for me, you can find my writing at comicbook.com. You can find me on Twitter at Russ Burlingame, RussBurlingame. You can also find me at ECV_podcast. That's the Emerald City Video Podcast, where myself and people who used to work with me at a video store talk about movies. Our next episode, which I'm super excited about, is going to be Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 and Big Trouble in Little China. Shame to admit I had never seen prior to this podcast. So that's going to be a lot of fun for us to break down.
Very cool.
I should point out, since you mentioned podcasts, I guested on the Always Hold On to Smallville podcast, which you can find on Twitter at Always Smallville, but like just one S in the middle. But it was talking about the Christopher Reeve episode, Rosetta, which was kind of a big deal back in the day. You know, back when, you know, most Riverdale viewers were about like 3. But yeah, it was a good time. So check that out sometime too.
And while you're checking,
does that technically count?
Oh, go ahead.
I was just going to say, does that technically count, Chris, as the Smallville reference for the episode?
It has to.
Yeah.
If it doesn't, it's not.
Yeah, Smallville is my Mitball. So, yeah.
Napping.
You know, Martin Cummins played a villain on Smallville.
There you go. You're just, that's two now. Stop it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Calm down.
I think he killed somebody on that show, too.
Oh, boy. You're still talking.
Okay. Anyway, thanks for listening, everybody.
Well, wait. Before we sign off, while you're looking up whatever that Smallville podcast, what's it called?
Always Hold On to Smallville.
Cool. Rate and review us. Don't rate and review them. Rate and review us on iTunes. Give us 5 stars. Talk about how cool my hair is. Talk about how great Russ and Craig are, I guess, if you want. But yeah, just rate and review us on iTunes because that helps people find our podcast. And we like people finding our podcast.
It's true.
I like people finding our podcast. I don't want to speak for Craig and Russ. They might not want anybody to find it.
And Craig, we're going to be recording another episode.
His family.
Oh, yeah. No, now you're going to have to cut that, too.
No, I'm just going to leave that on as a mystery.
What'd you say?
I said
how many co-hosts has she burned through? I'm just leaving it at that. But, yeah, I totally forgot. So we'll be back later this week for another episode where we talk about episode 12, Anatomy of a Murder.
That episode, we're not going to record it right after the East Coast airing because I write for a comic book website for a living, so I have to go see Guardians of the Galaxy that night. I'm going to watch it on the East Coast. I'm going to immediately leave, go watch Guardians of the Galaxy, come back, and then we're going to try to record at like 2 in the morning my time when these gentlemen are just finishing watching the show.
Hey, Russ, can I tell you something?
Sure.
Guardians is super good.
I'm excited. Like, I said it that way that I have to, just because like that's the nature of my job, is that I have to, like, you know, I work 7 in the morning, so I have to be able to walk into work knowing what happens so that I don't get spoiled as soon as I walk in the door. Mm-hmm. It's not a hardship. It's a Marvel movie by a stretch, and so I'm super excited about the sequel.
It is very, very good. You will enjoy.
All right. Cool. Well, thanks, everybody, for listening to Archie Digest, a Riverdale podcast. We are a podcast about a story, about a town. And about we will be back. In, it's a different town.
Somebody save me.
But we'll be back in a couple of days.
Thanks Bye. For listening.
No thanks for listening. How about that? Internet, what are you going to do?
All right. Call Sheriff Keller.
Ugh. Everything's Archie. Archie's here. Betty's here. Veronica too. Reggie's here. Hey Jughead, where are you? Come on, let's go with the Archie Show.
Yeah, chapter 11. To Riverdale and back again.
That's right.
Look at me remembering stuff.
Which is a TV movie about an old...
Nope. Ready?
Yep.
All right. Welcome to the... see, I already forgot what we're called. The Archie Digest. I'm sorry. Archie Digest, a Riverdale podcast. Okay.